Okay, so this morning we're going to look at the sutta called the Anapanasati Sutta, which is the sutta on mindfulness of breathing. And this is still part of the Satipatthana, still part of the seventh factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, right mindfulness. This particular sutta is, I think, is interesting for a number of reasons. And one of the reasons is that mindfulness of breathing and this particular way of presenting it is something you find in many, many places in the suttas. There is a whole Sanyutta in the Sanyutta Nikaya where the discourses are collected according to topics. There's a whole section just on Anapanasati, which has a fairly large number of suttas on that topic. They're very repetitive, they're almost exactly the same. But there's a large number of suttas there. So this is one reason. So it appears to be one of the main ways that the Buddha taught meditation practice in those days. That's why you find so many of these suttas. Another reason why it's interesting is because it is one of the few places where meditation is taught very systematically in a step-by-step process. Somebody was asking before about more instruction, how to go step-by-step in the meditation. And this is really it. This is the how that is done in the suttas, what we're supposed to do, basically. And lastly, one of the reasons why it is interesting to my mind is because it is said, and we will see that in a second, that this fulfills the practice of Satipatthana. In other words, you know, you look at the Satipatthana Sutta and you see you're supposed to look, cultivate feelings or understand feelings in this way, right? You're supposed to observe and understand the mind states in that way. But it's not entirely clear how you do that. How do you observe these feelings? Do you just sit down and think about, feel feelings? Or do you, what exactly do you do? And this sutta gives a very precise way of how to do that whole process. And basically, it is through watching the breath. That is how you contemplate the feelings, how you contemplate the mind, how you do the whole process of Satipatthana through, via the breath meditation practice. And it is, as far as I know, it's the only place in the suttas where the Buddha gives a full explanation in that way, how Satipatthana is to be done. He gives a very clear and precise instruction about that. For that reason, I find it very, very interesting. And it makes it quite easy, right? People often discuss, how are we supposed to do Satipatthana? Well, this is really the kind of the direct instruction on how this is to be done. So all you have to do is breath meditation, right? Great, we don't have to worry too much about it. Don't complicate things too much. And that's the nice thing about that. So let's see what the Buddha has to say about this. Majjhima Nikaya 118, Mindfulness of Breathing, Anapanasati Sutta. Because when mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, it is of great fruit and great benefit. When mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, it fulfills the four focuses of mindfulness, the four attendings of mindfulness. When the four focuses of mindfulness are developed and cultivated, they fulfill the seven factors of awakening. When the seven factors of awakening are developed and cultivated, they fulfill true knowledge and deliverance. True knowledge and deliverance is arahantship. Deliverance here could be translated as freedom, vimutti, vijja vimutti, true knowledge and freedom. So the point here is that just by doing the breath meditation and following the step-by-step procedure we're going to have a look at in a second, just by doing that, it takes you all the way to the end of the path, right? To the final awakening, the deepest insight, the deepest, the very end of the Buddhist path. Obviously, it is a very powerful meditation technique, and it's also very natural, right? Just following the breath. There's nothing very weird about it or very religious about anything like that. It's just a very natural process that you follow. Of course, the experiences that you have on the way are quite astonishing, and that is what is interesting about it. Okay, so let us now see how this is done. And how, bhikkhus, is mindfulness of breathing developed and cultivated so that it is of great fruit and great benefit? Here, a bhikkhu gone to the forest or to the root of a tree or to an empty hut sits down, having folded his legs crosswise, set his body erect, and established mindfulness in front of him. Ever mindful, he breathes in. Mindful, he breathes out. So that is the basic background, the preliminary instruction for mindfulness of breathing. And as so often, the preliminary instruction is very useful. There's a lot of information just in that tiny little paragraph about how what we need to do to get the most out of this breath meditation. And the first thing that you will see here in this paragraph is this idea of gone to the forest, to the root of a tree, or to an empty hut, right? And what this shows us is that breath meditation, and any meditation which has any real depth to it, it is based on seclusion, right? Seclusion is an important factor. And this is one of the reasons why we have this meditation center here. It's not exactly gone to an empty hut, but it's heading in that direction, right? It gets you out of your normal environment, gets you into a peaceful place, and it's kind of a halfway house to going into seclusion. And this is one of the reasons why we have meditation centers. And the importance here, because we are going to do a meditation practice which is going to take you, when you do it fully, to very deep and still and powerful states of mind. These states of mind, they are, first of all, to get to those states of mind, you have to seclude the body. You have to get yourself out of the ordinary environment, seclude your mind from all the distractions of the world, all the sensory input, all the kind of feedback that other people give you all the time, kind of impacting on you. And once you have that, that is called kaya viveka, seclusion of the body. And it's based on that kaya viveka, you get the chitta viveka, which is seclusion of the mind. These things are related to each other, and they have a kind of a sequence to it. First of all, you seclude yourself, then the mind becomes secluded. And the seclusion of the mind means the mind is secluded basically from the external world, and also secluded from the hindrances or the defilements of the mind. These are the two things that you are secluded from. So that is why it is so important to have the bodily seclusion first of all, because the mind cannot really calm down if it is always bombarded with sensory impacts, right? And this is what happens when you are around people, when you are in society. It's always a bombardment there. So you take yourself out of that bombardment, and then the mind has the ability to withdraw from that sensory impact around you. So this is the importance of seclusion. And that is why, you know, in Buddhism, we always have this idea of the forest tradition of monks. And it's very interesting. The forest tradition is not a unified tradition. It is something that is found in all Buddhist countries. All Buddhist countries have a minority of monastics that seek seclusion and seek the forest life. For that particular reason, because they are already either doing very well, or at least they are aspiring to do well in the meditation practice. So these are the monastics that usually take their idea of being a monk or being a nun, take it seriously, and they not just have a vocation. I'm a monk, you know, this is my livelihood or whatever. They actually are on a real spiritual path, and that is why those monastics are usually kind of the core of those who make progress in Buddhism. And it's very fascinating. In the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, the Buddha says that the seven factors for the future well-being of Buddhism and the future well-being of the Sangha, one of those aspects is that monastics go to the forest. They live in the forest. They have forest dwellings. That's one of the factor for the well-being of the whole Buddhist tradition, right? Very interesting, because that is where the insights come. That's where the understanding comes. And that understanding, that transformation of human beings, that knowledge that you get from that is what upholds Buddhism in the end. If nobody has that knowledge, it tends to die out. So this is the importance of this idea of seclusion. So real anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, happens in seclusion. That is when it's possible to take this to its highest states. And then you sit down, right? That's the next one here. You sit down. Meditation really happens when you sit down, especially this kind of meditation, Anapanasati, is not a walking meditation practice. These deep meditations is something that happens in the sitting posture. It doesn't mean you cannot walk. Walking is also mentioned in the suttas. The walking is more used for reflection and for other kinds of practices. So you sit down. And then it says here, having folded his legs crosswise. So this is then how you're supposed to, this is the how you're sitting down. So the question that arises, is it absolutely necessary to fold your legs crosswise? To me, the answer is no. And I think the reason why that is in there is because that was the natural way for people to sit in those days. That's how you felt comfortable, right? You would sit on the floor and you would usually fold your legs crosswise. They had chairs at that time as well, but I think it was very common for people to sit on the floor. So that's how you were comfortable. So more important than whether your legs are crossed or not is actually whether you are comfortable. So I understand that to mean, it's a little bit uncertain, but I understand that to mean sitting in a comfortable position. That's how I really understand that to mean. And so you sit in a comfortable position, setting your body erect, right? And the idea is that if you have mindfulness and your mind is clear, there's a bit more clarity if you sit straight than if you're kind of slumping. It's usually a sign that you're a bit tired or not don't have the brightness of the mind. So you sit reasonably erect. You know, you can lean back, that's okay, especially if you're sitting on a chair. Sometimes it's very hard to sit perfectly erect on a chair, so leaning back is okay, but you sit reasonably erect. But remember, the sitting straight like this, it is also about doing that at the right time. If you force yourself to sit straight when you're very tired or your mind isn't ready, you don't have any mindfulness or whatever, then often it is not natural and you have to force yourself a little bit. And because you have to force yourself, it's not really comfortable. So this too is about right time and right place. I know a lot of monastics who are very, very skilled meditators, very often they start off by leaning back against the wall. And you lean back just to establish mindfulness, to establish the ease in the body, right, first of all. And once that ease in the body has been established, then it's almost as if the body straightens itself at the right time when you need to. So it's all everything in Buddhism is about time and place, knowing when to do what, right? And you can feel that by feeling if it feels natural, if it feels easy, if it feels good. That is how you can know whether it is the right time and right place. Not by like indulging, but feeling at ease, right? Which is very different from actually indulging. These are two very separate things. So you sit straight, but you sit straight at the right time. And then the last one, which is of course the most important one of these instructions, is having established mindfulness in front of him or in front of you. Right? So mindfulness of breathing, that's why it's called mindfulness of breathing. The word mindfulness is in there, is because you have to be mindful before you even start. The Pali has satting upatapetva, and that, the way that is phrased, means having done it before you actually do the mindfulness of breathing. So if you sit down and you just go to the breath straight away, it's not the right way, not the right approach, according to the word of the Buddha. First you have to establish mindfulness. How do you do that? What does it mean? Well, it means that you sit down and you wait for mindfulness to arise, right? And this is this whole approach that there's maybe different ways of doing that, but I'm just, establishing the feelings in the body, relaxing yourself, feeling good in the present moment, enjoying what you're doing. All of these things are meant to guide you so that mindfulness becomes established before you start to do anything else. All of that is about establishing the mindfulness. So please remember that. And what does it mean? One more time, what does it mean to establish mindfulness? It means that you are present. Your mind is not, there might be a little bit of thinking left, but not much, right? You're essentially here. The mind, because you feel comfortable and nice, the mind wants to be in the present moment. It's not running off into the future or the past. It's not fantasizing about all kinds of things. But you're just hanging out in the present moment, patiently enjoying what is there. That is basically what it means to be mindful. You have a sense of clarity about what is going on, clear comprehension, right? That is basically what it means. And then, when you have that, that is when you are really ready to watch the breath. So it's time and place. Everything is time and place on this Buddhist path. To know what you need, to do what is right at this moment with the mind you have right now. You have to understand yourself, first of all, to be able to apply yourself in the right way. And of course, having established mindfulness also means that you have done everything, you know, over a long period of time before you come here, kept a good conduct or morality and kindness to yourself and the world around you. And through that integrity in your life, that integrity, moral integrity, you find that over time, mindfulness improves. And again, this is what this whole path is about, right? A cause for mindfulness is morality, is sila, is your personality, your personal conduct, the way you think and all these kind of things. So that is kind of the long-term cause for mindfulness, is all the things you do in daily life. And the short-term cause for mindfulness is just sitting back and enjoying the present moment. But two different causes, the kind of long-term one and the short-term one, and both of those are important. And then it says here, having established mindfulness in front of you, parimukha is the Pali word, and a lot of debate what exactly that means. But mukha means either the mouth or the face, and parimukha means something like around, could possibly mean around the face or around the mouth, something like that. But essentially it means in the present moment, right? It means here, right now. Mindfulness can be used in many different ways. You can recollect past lives. Recollection of past life is actually a use of mindfulness. It's not drifting off into the past. It's a deliberate act of thinking about the past. But this is like mindfulness, not recalling the Buddha, not doing all these other acts of mindfulness, but staying right here, right now, in the present moment, having like established it in front of you, having a sense of being here, right? Being present right here. That's essentially what it means. And sometimes this is interpreted as meaning you're supposed to watch the tip of your nose or your upper lip or something like that. But I don't think that there is any very good evidence to think that that is actually what it means. And I think just having established it in front of you, I think is a perfectly fine translation of this. And then, once all of this is done, right, these are the preliminary things. These are the things you established first. And when that is done, then really the mindfulness of breathing starts. And it says here, ever mindful, he breathes in. Mindful, he breathes out. Sattova passisami. And So this here is, it says here, sattova is a two words, sattva is mindful, and va is this little word, which also is probably meaningful in this context. Va can either be an intensifier, and that's why it says here, ever mindful, or va can mean like just or only, just mindful, he breathes in, just mindful, he breathes out. It is hard to know exactly what the meaning is here, but I tend to think it means maybe just mindful or only mindful, only aware, because the mindfulness is obviously increasing a little bit as we go down here. It's improving. So every mindful is a possibility, but I think perhaps just mindful is more likely. And if it means just mindful, what does that mean then? Well, what it means is that you're not trying to do anything, you're not trying to control the breath, you're not trying to use your will in any way, you're not kind of forcing what is going on. And because there's no force, you are just mindful. You're not taking control of the situation, all you're doing is being aware. You're sitting back and just relaxing, and the breath is just there in front of you, and you're observing it without any control, any willpower, anything at all. And it's kind of, sometimes it's difficult because you feel that if you don't control at all, it will just disappear, right? It won't stay there. And that, of course, there's some truth to that. It's more difficult for you to be aware of the breath when there's no control. But this is kind of the whole point. The whole point is that it's supposed to be a very natural thing. You are aware of the breath, just like you are aware of a movie on the screen, because you are attracted to what you're seeing. It's easy, because it's beautiful, because it's attractive and delightful to watch. That is why it is happening here. So that is what I think perhaps it means there, just mindful. All you are is mindful. There's no additional quality of mind that is required apart from that mindfulness, such as using willpower or anything like that. So just mindful, you breathe in and you breathe out. So that is the preliminary, and now we come to what is known as the four tetrads of Anapanasati. Four tetrads because they are four parts with four factors each. And each of these four, and this is what is interesting, each of these four tetrads corresponds to one of the focuses of mindfulness. So the first one corresponds to the body contemplation, the second one to the feeling contemplation, and then the mind contemplation and the mind object contemplation here. So this is how it goes. This is the first tetra, the first four factors of this Anapanasati Sutta. Breathing in long, he understands, I breathe in long. Or breathing out long, he understands, I breathe out long. Breathing in short, he understands, I breathe in short. Or breathing out short, he understands, I breathe out short. He trains thus, I shall breathe in experiencing the whole body. He trains thus, I shall breathe out experiencing the whole body of the breath. He trains thus, I shall breathe in tranquilizing the bodily formation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the bodily formation. So here you start off and you understand pajanati. This means you are directly experiencing these things, right? You understand, I breathe in long. So it's basically just awareness again. Awareness, understanding that this is what is going on. It's not just you're just mindful, but you also know what is happening while you are there. Again, this combination of sampajanya, clear comprehension, together with mindfulness going together there. So, first thing, breathe in long. Second thing is breathe in short, right? Or breathe out short. And the reason for that, perhaps, is that often in meditation, as the meditation progresses, this is an experience that at least some people have, is that at the beginning the breath is quite long, and then as you become even more peaceful, the breath shortens as you do that. That is one explanation for that particular sequence anyway. It could also be that it doesn't really have any particular consequence, is that sometimes the breath is short, sometimes it's long, and it's just you're just bringing in the two there. But I think for many people, they experience the long breath, and as you become a bit more peaceful, the breath becomes shorter. And then here, so what is going on here is that the mindfulness is strengthening, right? As you are staying with the breath, you become more and more aware of what is going on in the breath. So in the third factor here, you have, I shall breathe in, experiencing the whole body. Sabbakaya patisangvedi. This is a controversial what this actually means, because according to the traditional interpretation, it means the whole body of the breath, right? It just says the whole body, so you don't really know exactly what it refers to. And in the next one here, it tranquilizing the bodily activity, their body very clearly refers to the breath, because that is how it is explained elsewhere in the suttas. So the question is, what does it mean on this third step? And I think here that the traditional understanding is probably right? It means the whole body of the breath. This is all about breath contemplation, right? It is explained later on that the breath is considered a certain aspect of the body. It is a body in the body, if you like. So everything, to me, points to the idea that this is talking about the breath here. We're tranquilizing the breath. We're using the breath all the way as the meditation object. So what is going on then, if that is the right way of looking at it, what is going on here is that you're awareness is becoming more powerful. And because your awareness is becoming more powerful, it means that you're able to see the breath completely. There's no aspect of the breath which is kind of left out. You see it all the way through, you know, from the beginning to the end, and it, because your awareness is becoming very strong. So that is, I think, in my opinion, probably what it actually means. But there are other interpretations, and one of them is actually that you do experience the whole body. And I think this is partly where the Guenka tradition gets their ideas from, is that they interpret that this in this way. So for them, you actually go to the body and you actually experience the full physical body at this stage. Right? So this this apparently is how one of the reasons why they have this idea of feeling the whole body in the Guenka meditation. But I'm not sure if that actually is the correct interpretation here. Anyway, so that is, but regardless, remember that it doesn't matter so much sometimes how you interpret it. Remember that the overall idea of meditation is that you're becoming more peaceful, you're getting more clarity, right? The mind is heading in the right direction. And if that is what is happening, then whether you're watching the breath, or even if you then go to the whole body at this point, as long as your mind is developing the right way, that is, in the end, all that really matters. So either interpretation is acceptable as long as the mind is heading in the right direction. And then we have the fourth step of this first tetrad. And here he says, he trains us, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the bodily formation. Formation here is sankhara, this is kaya sankhara, and it could perhaps here be translated better as activity. This is how Venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi translates sankhara now. So you're tranquilizing the bodily activity. That it makes more sense, right? It's more easy to understand what that means. So the bodily activity is, in this case, because your mind is becoming peaceful, you are mindful, the only thing you are really aware of is the breath. The rest of the body has kind of faded into the background. You're not really aware of it. I mean, sometimes a bit of pain may arise or whatever, but essentially now you are aware of the breath. So when it says tranquilizing the bodily activity, it refers to the breath. And in fact, it is elsewhere in the suttas, the bodily activity, kaya sankhara, is defined specifically as referring to the breath. So you actually know that that is the meaning of that word. So here you're tranquilizing the bodily breath, right? This is how you train yourself, tranquilizing the bodily breath, bodily activity. So at this point, you have been fully aware of the breath, and the next step then is that the whole process becomes tranquilized, become more peaceful, more and more peaceful, the breath becoming more and more refined, right, as you do this. This is what is going on here. It says that you train yourself thus, but remember that this is an automatic process. Your job is just to observe. Your job is just to be present. Your job is just to ensure that the process is heading in this direction. So when it says trains, it just means that sometimes these things don't happen automatically. So you have to do it again and again. You have to observe the mind. You have to understand what the obstacles are. We looked at all the obstacles yesterday, all the hindrances, all these kind of things. And as you come to understand your mind, understand how the process works, right? But just by observing, not by controlling, this is how you train in this process. And this is how eventually you move towards more tranquility in the breath. You can see there's a slight difference here. At the first part, it says you understand, right? That's just aware. And that becomes because you have already established mindfulness. This is the way I would read this. And then you start training, because then you are going even deeper after that. So you're just aware. You try to observe. You try to understand the process. So the breath is becoming very refined. I'm sure many of you have seen these things already happening in meditation practice. Many of you may not have seen this because people are on such different places on the path, but some of you, I'm sure you have seen this, becoming tranquil. So that is equivalent. These first four steps are equivalent to kaya anupassana, the first part of the Satipatthana Sutta, the very first part, the contemplation of the body. This is what this is. So this is all you have to do. And if you do this, you actually fulfill contemplation of the body. don't have to do the watching the 31 parts of the body, don't have to do this kind of stuff. It may be useful, but you don't actually have to do it. All you really have to do is to watch the breath in this particular way here. And then, so that is the first tetrad on the of Anapanasati, and then we come to the second one. And this one now, we are going into the contemplation of feeling here. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing rapture. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing rapture. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing pleasure. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing pleasure. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing the mental formation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing the mental formation. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the mental formation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the mental formation. So here, here you can see a lot of this has to do with feelings, right? Especially in the beginning here. I shall breathe in, experiencing rapture. So rapture is, again, the Pali word is piti. So piti pati sangvedi, I shall experience rapture. And so now, and this is again what we saw at the very beginning of this retreat when I was looking at this sutta, which talks about the progress of meditation. As the meditation deepens, you start to experience this beautiful senses of joy and happiness and rapture in your meditation. And this is what is happening here. Everything is becoming so peaceful. Everything is becoming so delightful, right? Rapture, this kind of this sense of happiness, joy is arising inside of you, perhaps coursing through your body and all these kind of things. So everything is becoming very delightful and very beautiful at this stage. And here it is called, this is called feeling contemplation, because now the feelings are coming to the fore. The feelings are becoming the strongest aspect of that experience. The breath is still there, but the breath is kind of moving a little bit into the background, and the feelings are becoming very prominent here. So it's still a kind of, it's still a breath meditation. The breath is still the anchor in the experience, and it's still there, but the feeling arises with the breath. Exactly where you have your attention here, you still should probably keep your attention on the breath, but it depends a little bit on how you apply yourself. Your attention is on the breath, but the strong feeling is coming with it. So you train yourself, right? You understand the process again. After the meditation, you reflect, how did I get there? What are the things I abandoned? What are the perceptions that I would give rise to? You did not give rise to perceptions that led to anger or ill will, right? You moved your way away from those to perceptions that lead to peace, seeing the good in other people, seeing positive things. So this is how you learn. How do you deal with the perceptions in such a way that that you are giving, allowing this process to happen by itself? So all of this is part of that. You train yourself, you understand, you observe, and you see what is happening here. And then, so this is the first one, experiencing rapture. The next one is experiencing pleasure. Pleasure is sukha here. And so this, in the typical way that the path is described, sukha is usually defined as a more delightful experience than rapture. It is more tranquil, it has more tranquility to it. But basically there are two aspects of just of happiness, one being a bit more profound than the other one. Exactly how this combines with what we were seeing before, because before, remember, we went through the sequence: piti, then pasadi, rapture, then calm, and then sukha. And here, the sequence is a little bit different, but the idea is that these are just different strengths of happiness. That's essentially what it's all about. So you go to the sukha, and then after the sukha, the next thing you do is, it says here, experiencing the mental formation. And again, formation here basically refers to kind of activity or the mental state, perhaps, in this particular case. And the mental formation in the suttas can mean, it can mean two things. It can mean the will that is still present, the doer inside, the activity of the mind, right? The mind is still not 100% stable. There's still some movement at this stage. It is not a completely unified state of mind yet. And that will, which is still there, this is one possible understanding of mental formation here. Another one, another way that mental formation is described in the suttas, is just described as the kind of basic mental phenomena of feeling and perception. So feeling and perception itself is actually mental activity. And here, that the most prominent thing that you are perceiving and feeling is just bliss, right? So it's that bliss itself which probably is here meant as mental formation. So these two things are really very related to each other. So you are experiencing the mental formation, right? So where the will have an effect on what you perceive, on the feeling will be conditioned by the will. So really it is all pretty much very, very closely related to each other. So we don't really have to define that more closely. But essentially it means the experience you have at this point, the feeling, right? And then that is why the last one is the tranquilizing of that mental formation. So whether you tranquilize the will, the doer, or whether you just tranquilize that experience you have, and that is probably the best way of looking at it, you're tranquilizing that experience. You're just aware, you're just experiencing the bliss and the happiness, and you're allowing it by just observing, by not being involved, you're allowing the whole thing to calm down even further. Right? So you're standing back, you're not getting involved, and the further you go on this path, the less involvement there is, the less your mind is taking part in what is going on. You're just very, very passive, just observing what is happening here. And as you do that, the pleasure, the happiness, the tranquility, all of these things are continuously improving and becoming more stable and more profound as you do this. Right? The experience becoming more and more delightful as you go along. So this is how this then gradually improves. Sometimes these things can happen quite quickly in meditation. Sometimes it takes a long time. Sometimes it takes kind of years of development. It doesn't matter as long as you're enjoying the process on the way. That's really all that really matters here. So that is the equivalent then to the Vedana Nupassana, the contemplation of feelings in the Anapanasati, in the Satipatthana Sutta. You're experiencing happiness in various stages, and then you are calming that happiness down, so it's becoming tranquilized. That is basically what that second stage here, the second tetrad, is all about. So then we come to the third tetrad, and now this is equivalent to the contemplation of mind in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Citta Nupassana. And this goes as follows. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, gladdening the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, gladdening the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, stilling the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, stilling the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, liberating the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, liberating the mind. So now we are moving on to the mind itself. And as we go through this, things are getting more and more profound, more and more deep, more and more beautiful. And here, because we are dealing with the mind, basically it means that the kind of the physical world, the world of the five senses, the body and all of that is fading into the background, right? The senses are kind of disappearing. The body is no longer there. All that is fading into the background. And here, it doesn't say that here, but here it is likely we're moving into that stage where people often perceive what is often called nimittas, right? You're seeing like a bright light or something like that. Maybe initially it may not even be that bright, but you're seeing something very powerful and beautiful in your meditation. These are often called samadhi nimittas, bright lights coming up in your mind. And at that point, the body is really falling into the background. It's barely there anymore. You can perhaps still, the breath is still kind of there, but more and more in the background. And that's why it is still called breathing meditation, because that is kind of still is still there to maybe a very small extent. So you're experiencing the mind, right? The mind is coming into the fore, the body fading into the background. Body hasn't been let go of completely, absolutely, but it is you're on the way of letting go of the body. So this is the first one, experience in the mind. Then you are gladdening the mind, is the second one. Because when, especially when these nimittas arise in the meditation practice, often they have to be gladdened, they have to be made even more happy, right? You're already very happy already, but you have to make it more brilliant, more powerful. And the more powerful it is, the more happiness there is in that nimitta, the greater is the ability to then to take you even further into the states of samadhi as a consequence. So how do you gladden that nimitta? By doing absolutely nothing again. All you do is you're just aware and you're allowing the brightness of the nimitta to come by itself. And it happens by itself. If you are just purely observing without any involvement, then it is a natural process that things become more and more bright, more and more beautiful. Happens by itself, nothing you have to do, right? And then gladdening is happening here. And you understand again after a while that this is how the process works. You just sit back and you just wait and you just focus. And as you focus, as you keep your focus on that, this is the process that happens. Again, it's about training, because you learn on the way how this whole thing happens by just being passive. And the next one is about here, samadayang chittang, stilling the mind. So as a part of this process of gladdening it is also stilling it, right? You're keeping your attention 100% on that nimitta. Things are moving less and less. Sometimes people experience that these nimittas are moving, that they have, you know, there may be many different shapes happening. It may be quite a bit complicated, but after a while, things start to still down. There's often only a single thing left in your perception. That's all that is there. And this one thing becoming incredibly still, not moving, and also incredibly bright and beautiful at the same time. This is like, you know, now you're moving kind of into a different realm, right? A different reality, a reality you're not used to. And this is why, even though this is very natural in the sense that you're just watching the breath, it's just natural phenomena arising, still you're kind of now kind of moving out of your ordinary, you're out of your kind of, for most people when they first experience these things, you're out of your comfort zone a little bit, right? Because now you're seeing things which are not normally experience. So that's why, this is part of why it is a training. Just the idea of getting used to this is a training experience. And then the mind becomes very still, and eventually it says here, you breathe in, liberating the mind. This is the last stage of the first of the mind contemplation. You're liberating the mind. And again, liberating the mind means that you are liberating it from the kind of ordinary oppressions of the world, liberating it from the senses, liberating it from the body, liberating it from the five hindrances, all of these things that tie the mind down, that make the mind not, you don't feel free. Only afterwards do you understand what freedom is. Once you go beyond that, then you understand real freedom, right? And so liberating the mind is the very last thing you do as you enter into the jhana states, when the whole world kind of disappears and you enter an entirely new realm. And these are what the jhana states are all about. And your mind kind of locks into that new realm. That is a samadhi, a real, really deep and profound samadhi experience. So this is the last thing. And beyond that, there's nothing more to be done, right? This is the very last thing you do as you allow that. Basically, it means that you are allowing the mind to enter into that jhana. You don't become scared. You don't become excited. But you're allowing the process to happen. This is really what that refers to. And then you have entered a different world. And because it's a new world and things are so different, you have left behind this sensual world entirely, absolutely, completely. Because it is an entry into a different world. This is called the Rupa Loka, Rupa Dhatu in the suttas, because of the Rupa Vachara. Because it is a different world, you gain a lot of understanding, of wisdom as a consequence, because you can compare one world to the other one. You know which world is preferable. You understand for the first time why it is that the sensory world is a world of suffering compared to this new thing that you have gone into. You have let go of a whole load of suffering, and you have entered into the state of absolute, pure, unified, unwavering bliss. Bliss upon bliss upon bliss, as Ajahn Brahm normally describes it. So that is the Chitta Anupassana, the contemplation of the mind, so that is taking that contemplation to its culmination, and you can see now we are heading, we're coming into the area of samadhi, of the jhanas, of the real samadhi states. And of course that then takes us into the four jhanas. We will have maybe a more look at those afterwards. Okay, so now we come to the very last tetrad of the Anapanasati Sutta, and now this tetrad is more focused on gaining wisdom based on this. You can say gaining insight, if you like. And this is what comes, you know, all of this process we have seen now, all of this is possible to gain insight or understanding as you go along. In fact, it is necessary to always contemplate and to observe so you understand the process, so you can take it further. All that is part of vipassana, right? Samatha vipassana going together all the way through. But now we're coming to the deeper states of insight, coming in the last stage here. So again, this is equivalent then to the fourth Satipatthana, the fourth aspect of the Satipatthana Sutta. He trains thus, I shall breathe in contemplating impermanence, anicca nupassana. He trains thus, I shall breathe out contemplating impermanence. He trains thus, I shall breathe in contemplating fading away. He trains thus, I shall breathe out contemplating fading away. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, contemplating cessation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating cessation. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, contemplating relinquishment. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating relinquishment. So this is all about seeing how things are impermanent. All of these things are really about impermanence in one way or another. Anicca in Pali means not regular, not steady. Viraga, fading away, is obviously the fading away of things. That is also a matter of impermanence. Cessation is very clearly a matter of impermanence, right? Things just disappearing completely. So all of these are just different strengths, if you like, of anicca, of impermanence. So what is it that we are contemplating here, right? It just says contemplating impermanence. It's not very clear what exactly is it that we are contemplating here. And I think the answer to that is we have just been through this process, right? So it is looking back on that process and understanding the impermanence in that process itself. So you're looking back upon this process of mindfulness of breathing and seeing what has happened there. And this is part of the thing about, you know, at the end of the meditation to reflect back on what is happening. That is a small part of that. This is what is happening here as well. So because throughout this whole process, one of the things that you see are how things are always changing. Things are moving. Things are never stable. Things are never regular. Things are always uncertain. Right? This is the basic idea of anicca, that things are impermanent. But more powerfully, as you go through this process, you see how things are fading away, right? What is fading away? Well, at the beginning, the breath is starting to fade away. The breath is becoming more and more refined, right? It's gradually disappearing into the background. That is one aspect of fading away, the breath itself. The physical body is fading away. The physical body has already faded away quite a bit, even at the beginning of this meditation. And as you go through it, it fades away more and more and more. So this is like the aspect of physical feeling is fading away. Another thing is what is fading away is the senses, right? You are less and less sensory input. Your eyes are already closed. There's no taste or smell to be spoken of at this point. The body is fading into the background, and usually the last sense to disappear is often the hearing. So the hearing is kind of the last thing that remains. That is also said in the suttas, that hearing is kind of the last thing that stops you from entering a jhana state. So that is fading away, right? All of these things are fading away, and you see that as you go through the process. Another very important thing that is fading away here are the hindrances, right? The problems. The restlessness is fading away. The sloth and torpor is fading away. The mind is becoming more and more bright, right? There is no desire in the mind. There's no craving. Craving is always about the movement, looking into the future, agitation. Here the mind is becoming more and more still. It's the opposite of craving, the opposite of desire, of all of these things. And of course, the ill will. So all of the hindrances, all of the defilements, all of that is also fading away through this process. So things are changing, fading away, viraga. You're looking back upon what is happening. We always have to base our contemplation, ideally, on real experiences, what is actually happening in our meditation practice. And then the last one is cessation, right? All of these things, they come to a point when they cease completely. And that is really what is happening, especially when you enter the jhana state. That is when all of these things just completely come to an end. They're completely gone. They are gone so far that you don't even have access to them anymore. You cannot turn your mind back to those things. You have left that world behind and you have entered a different world. And you just have to wait for that new state to terminate. And when it comes to a natural end, then you get access back to the previous world again. And this is one of the reasons why there is a sense of fear sometimes, or when you, as you're entering the jhanas, because you feel that you are leaving something behind, something that you're used to. You're going beyond that, and it just disappears completely, right? Of course, that is a bit worrying when you have to kind of leave something behind so completely. Because we are attached to things, because of the sense of self, because we identify with these things. Here you have to leave behind a large part of your identity. And of course, later on you realize that it was all suffering, so actually there's no problem anyway. But at that point, often you feel a bit fearful. So that is why this is such a powerful thing when all that ceases, because you're seeing things in a very, very new way afterwards. And then the last one here is relinquishment, contemplating relinquishment. And relinquishment is the idea that you are no longer, once you see these things fading away, and afterwards when you come out, you stop craving for these things because you understand they are suffering. You understand that they are a problem. So craving itself is being undermined. Right? And this is, of course, the third noble truth, the idea of the giving up of craving for things. This is what relinquishment means. You're finally relinquishing it altogether. Not only have you seen that it has ceased and come to an end, but you relinquish any further desire for these things in the future. Craving itself is being completely undermined. So this is then the deepest state of insight, is when the craving is given up, not just temporarily, but more on a permanent kind of basis. So you contemplate, you watch on as you relinquish these things once and for all, and then they don't come back again here. Or the craving doesn't come back again, rather. So that is how you contemplate this. You take your experience and you use your experience and you start to see that this is actually what is happening there. It's a very natural process again. You don't have to force this because all of these things are just there for you to observe anyway, right? You see all of this happening as you go through this. Okay, so then we come to the final part of the Anapanasati Sutta. Because that is how mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated so that it is of great fruit and great benefit. I say that this is a certain body among bodies, namely in-breathing and out-breathing. That is why on that occasion a bhikkhu abides contemplating an aspect of the body, energetic, clearly comprehending and mindful, having put away desire and aversion for the sensual world. So again, this first part here refers to the very first aspect, the very first paragraph, and then a similar kind of paragraph about equating this with each of the four satipatthanas is found all the way through her. So that is the Anapanasati Sutta for you. A very beautiful, very profound sutta about the meditation practice in great detail. And really, you know, if you're going to be a meditator and you're going to practice this path, that is really all you need to take your meditation from the beginning all the way to the end. You don't really need much more than that. That is usually sufficient. And then if you use that as a basis for solving your problems in meditation, etc., then gradually you will move on from step to step, and you see this whole thing evolving inside of you, right? Evolving in your mind. You can see this step-by-step process actually happening. And it's all very natural and very easy and very real and very, you know, very tangible. And that is the power of this whole practice. Okay, so that is all that we can do for this morning. And so this afternoon I'm going to take another sutta, which actually isn't here, and do that this afternoon. That is the sutta on the different kinds of recollection, how to give rise to joy, so how to actually get this process going a little bit by recalling things in the right way. What I might do is just to get a copy for myself and read it out, and you can just listen. Sometimes it's just nice to listen, right? And I will give you the reference to that sutta, so if you want to read it up on it later on, you can. So I'll see you again at 3:00.